In this slide, we will see the flocculonodular lobe, and you can see the nodule on the vermis and the flocculus, which is labeled black. It looks like a tree, and you can see the stem attached to the nodule. By the side of it is the posterior cerebellar notch. So you can see the nodule, the flocculus. So your labeling goes as this. On the vermis, you can see the black nodule. By its side is the posterior cerebellar notch. And then you draw the flocculus like the tree, color it in a different color, and pull it like a stem to the nodule. So this makes your flocculonodular lobe. Thank you. A very good afternoon, my dear students. I'm sure you wrote your brainstem exam well. We will find out what were the challenges and what were the strengths as you wrote the exam. We are really experimenting upon various tools for learning, and we are also not experienced in each of these tools application. Probably you may be more oriented about it. Nevertheless, we respect your contributions and your participation, and we are also thrilled. Each one of us in anatomy is thrilled about providing you the necessary tools for teaching learning purpose. Now today is the day, as I said before, where we are going to discuss about cerebellum. Now the word cerebellum actually means little brain. And this you see how related it is with cerebrum. So cerebrum is the bigger one, cerebellum is the smaller one. So in the next PowerPoint, we will see a little more about the gross anatomy of cerebellum. Now coming to the next PowerPoint, you can see here that cerebellum is just adjacent to the cerebrum. As you can see, it's a Latin word. I have said it means little brain. It is located in the dorsal part of the hind brain. And so you can see the hind brain here, and you can see this is also known as the rhombencephalon. This plays an important role in motor control, which is ipsilateral control on body. Now coming to the term ipsilateral, you all know we use two terms. One is contralateral, other is ipsilateral. Ipsilateral means same-sided, and contralateral means opposite-sided. I'm sure you know this. Remember my first class when you entered the medical college. So this is more concerned with the motor control. We will see how beautifully this cerebellum controls us as we will do the clinical anatomy of cerebellum. So coming to the location of cerebellum, it is located in the posterior cranial fossa. Since we are doing a virtual class online medium, so I cannot relate you to the touch of the bone which we would have had in our 2 to 4 sessions. So where you could have seen the anterior cranial fossa, the middle cranial fossa, and the posterior cranial fossa. Now you all know that the posterior cranial fossa, the main bone is the occipital bone. So it has the cerebellar fossa inside. If you remember very clearly, there are 4 areas or fossae in the occipital bone which are meant for lodging the cerebellum. This is in the squamous part of the occipital bone, and this is very important that it is located in the posterior cranial fossa. So we can locate it on the posterior aspect, and quite often this is injured when a person falls with the back, injuring the occipital bone. So let us quickly recapitulate the salient points of cerebellum, that is, it's in the dorsal part of hindbrain. It is for the ipsilateral control of the body, and it is located in the posterior cranial fossa in the cerebellar fossa of squamous part of occipital bone. Is that clear? Now we will go to the next slide. So actually, now furthermore, if we look at exactly where is cerebellum, now see the entire brain in the first diagram, where you can see the colored part of the brain, and look at the green one, the occipital lobe, and just inferior to it is the blue one labeled as cerebellum. So it is located inferior to the occipital lobe. And if you remember cerebellum, when we did the falx cerebri, cerebelli, tentorium cerebelli, tentorium cerebelli is like a tent. So it is separated by the tentorium cerebelli. Now, my dear students, you must know the attachments of the tentorium cerebelli in this connection, which has already been done. Now, anteriorly, it is related to the dorsal surface of pons and medulla. So, pons and medulla, you all know, are part of brain stem. And behind this is actually the cerebellum, which looks, on a cut section, it looks like tree, which we call arbor vitae. We will come to it little later. And thus it, both the structures are separated by fourth ventricle. Now, this fourth ventricle also we will do along with cerebellum in a separate session. Therefore, to recapitulate this PowerPoint, it is inferior to the occipital lobe, posterior to the pons and medulla, and separated by the fourth ventricle, and occipital lobe is separated by the tentorium cerebelli. The relations, the attachments of tentorium cerebelli is a must know, which has already been covered, and I expect you to know it. We will go to the next slide now. Now, coming to this PowerPoint, you can see that this is dealing with the gross anatomy of cerebellum. So, cerebellum has two hemispheres, which are called cerebellar hemispheres. Now, in the intermediate part, you will see the varmis, which is an elevated portion, which we call worm in appearance. Remember the word vermiform appendix? So, it is worm-like appearance, that is why it is also called varmis. Now, the first part of this diagram, which you can see here, is the superior surface. And the lower one is the inferior surface. So, anterosuperior aspect, you can see there is a notch, which we call superior cerebellar notch. And posteriorly, or posteroinferior aspect, there is also a notch, which is known as posterior cerebellar notch. This posterior cerebellar notch is related to falx cerebelli. So, my dear students, again to remind you, please recapitulate falx cerebri, cerebelli and tentorium cerebelli as you go through cerebellum. Because until and unless you are clear about the attachment of the falx cerebri, cerebelli and tentorium cerebelli, the understanding is rather difficult. Therefore, you think of when you are, since you don't have the specimen in hand, I would ask you to take a white paper and fold it in half, and then you have one elevated part in the middle. Think this as the vermis, the elevated part, and the two portions of the white paper is the cerebellar hemispheres. Turn it, you will find that the elevated part has a groove now. This is the inferior aspect of the vermis, and you have the two cerebellar hemispheres. Hold it in anteroposterior direction. The anterior part is the superior cerebellar notch, and the posterior part is the inferior cerebellar notch. I'm sure you could understand it better now. Therefore, this is the cerebellum
we start with the gross anatomy, and this is the first PowerPoint about the gross anatomy of the cerebellum. More to see. I'm sure you have understood the gross now. So you still have the white paper by your side. Now I will again recapitulate. The elevated part is the vermis. So this is the area of the vermis which is superior vermis. The midline ridge, it is like a midline ridge. And by the side on the cerebellar hemispheres, you will be making linear depressions. You can also press the paper and make the depressions on your own. So these are narrow and shallow linear depressions which are called fissures. We have the primary fissure anteriorly, horizontal fissure in between, and posterolateral fissure, which is a V or U-shaped fissure. Now in between these fissures, these fine cerebellar hemispheres are like folia. Folia means leaves. So when we cut the hemisphere, we get a picture as if it looks like tree. So therefore, anterior to primary fissure, we get the anterior lobe. Primary fissure to horizontal fissure to posterolateral fissure, we get the posterior lobe. And then we have posterior most is the flocculonodular lobes. So remember, there are three fissures, there are three lobes. So two hemispheres, one vermis in the center, three fissures, primary, horizontal, posterolateral, and three lobes, anterior, posterior, and flocculonodular lobes. Okay, now we will discuss this diagram in detail in successive slides. Since this concept is very important for understanding of cerebellum, I would like to look at these two diagrams again. So see the superior surface. This is the superior surface. In both the diagrams, you can see the superior surface. Central is the lingula. On either side, you can see the primary fissure or fissura prima. So this part is known as anterior lobe. Then we have the horizontal fissure. And then we have the posterolateral fissure. So in between the anterior lobe and the posterolateral fissure, we have the posterior or middle lobe, and then we have the flocculonodular lobe. Therefore, we have, you can now see beautifully in this diagram on the left, you can see the superior cerebellar notch and the inferior cerebellar notch. Therefore, this diagram is required to be practiced. So you will have to draw the vermis, then you will have to draw the hemispheres, then you have to draw the primary fissure, the horizontal fissure, the posterolateral fissure, and then you label the anterior lobe, the posterior or middle lobe, and the flocculonodular lobe. Next is the superior cerebellar notch and the posterior cerebellar notch. So these two notches are to be labeled. So this much of diagram is a must for the time being. Let us see what is there in the next slide. Now let us again recapitulate the fissures and lobes. Why I am doing it repeatedly is because to understand the gross anatomy of cerebellum, understanding fissures, understanding lobes is a must. It's a prerequisite, because once you take the cerebellum in hand, your examiner will definitely ask you to identify the primary fissure, the horizontal fissure, and then the examiner will ask you to identify the vermis, will ask you to point towards the cerebellar hemispheres, will ask you to point the anterior lobe, the posterior or middle lobe, and then the posterolateral sulcus is difficult to identify, and usually flocculonodular lobe is not very clear. Therefore, these are the must show aspects either in OSPI or in your practicals or in oral tables. You will have to show your examiner, and for that you need to be clear about it. Now, how do you hold this organ? So once again, you will hold this organ with the elevated margin looking superiorly. So you have two palms. So hold two hemispheres on each palm. So your right palm will hold the right hemisphere. Your left palm will hold the left hemisphere. And in between, you put the vermis. So you can hold this like you are holding little water. When you hold the water or when you carry flowers for your puja and all. So similarly, you are holding the cerebellum. And then you also have met the paper cutting and you know how to hold it anatomically. More when we do in practicals. But then the fissures and lobes, because the anterior and middle or posterior lobes, it is anterior lobe is 1/3 and posterior lobe is 2/3. In between these two lobes, we have the primary fissure or fissura prima. So your question can be fissura prima or primary fissure. The posterolateral fissure or the sulcus, this cuts off the anteroinferior part also, and then posteriorly is the flocculonodular lobe. So you must know that there are three fissures and three lobes and how to hold the cerebellum with both your palms with the elevated vermis looking superiorly. Now, more in the next slide. Now see, in this slide, we have turned the cerebellum down and then we can find the groove in between the cerebellar hemispheres. So this groove is known as the valicula. So what is looking superiorly is known as the elevated one structure known as the vermis, and what is looking inferiorly, the groove or the narrow, it's like a sulcus, it's like a narrow groove, it's like a narrow depression, it's a shallow depression, it is known as valicula. So you have that paper in your hand, so turn it down. So you can see, identify the valicula. Now, what you can do now is, if you have a sketch pen, color your vermis with pink, color your valicula with blue, and point out the primary fissure, the horizontal fissure, and posterior most is the posterolateral one with the flocculonodular lobe, which you can't delineate in your paper diagram. Therefore, you have the vermis superiorly and the valicula inferiorly, which you can see in the diagram above. Now, in this diagram, the reddish one is the valicula and the grayish part, which you can see, are the two hemispheres. So, this is very important that superior and inferior halves of middle lobe is separated by a horizontal fissure. Therefore, horizontal fissure is one which is a through and through fissure. So when you identify, it is very easy to identify the horizontal fissure because it cuts through and through. Therefore, the first fissure which you will see is the fissura prima or the primary fissure. Anterior to it is the anterior lobe, and posterior to fissura prima, then you get the posterior lobe and you get the horizontal fissure. The easiest to find is the horizontal fissure because it cuts through and through. More so when we see the next slides. I'm sure you are not having much difficulty in understanding the anatomy of cerebellum. If at all I am available, you can always ask me on my WhatsApp. But for this purpose, I would like you to open the Snell's Neuroanatomy, Vishram Singh, and cerebellum, Samardev, you can open, but only for cerebellum and fourth ventricle, you can also see the Chaurasia. So these are the four books, anyone you can refer, you will get a fairly good knowledge about what is the gross anatomy of cerebellum and the clinical anatomy, because these are the two most important things which you are asked. Say for example, your MCQ comes like this, that all are fissures found in cerebellum except, so A, primary fissure,
B, horizontal fissure, C, posterolateral fissure, and D, you can have any, say, so where you know which is to be marked. Similar for the lobes of cerebellum, you can be given all our lobes of cerebellum except anterior lobe, middle lobe, proculonodular lobe, and inferior lobe. So it will be inferior lobe. So students, as I always say, as you go slide by slide, especially in this period, frame your own MCQs, because you are the best maker of MCQ. And if you make your own MCQs, no matter what, there cannot be any other MCQs which can be framed in this syllabus. Now coming to this slide, where you can see the anterior lobe. What did I tell? I said anterior lobe is posteriorly flanked by the fissura prima or the primary fissure. Therefore, if you look at the diagram on your right, the vermis, that is the elevated part, you will find the anterior most part is labeled as lingula, the black part. Now, what is there by the side of it? It is the superior cerebellar notch. And then we have the next part of the vermis is central lobule. So, what is central lobule is a part of the vermis, and the corresponding cerebellar hemisphere is known as ala. So, you will ask me now, what is the corresponding cerebellar hemisphere for lingula? Well, my dear students, cerebellar hemisphere is not present by the side of lingula. It is the superior cerebellar notch which is present. Therefore, the hemisphere part starts from the central lobule onwards. Therefore, central lobule has ala on its side. So, how many ala are there? Since there are two cerebellar hemispheres, there will be one ala on each side. So, in total, there will be two ala. Next part is culmen. Culmen, the part cerebellar hemisphere has, is anterior quadrangular lobule. So, anterior quadrangular lobule on the right side and left side. And then posteriorly is the primary fissure. Therefore, the anterior lobe of cerebellar hemisphere has ala, anterior quadrangular lobule, and vermis has lingula, central lobule, and culmen. Then we have the primary fissure. Now you have to practice this diagram. I would like my students to go slide by slide, and as I go on teaching, you draw your diagram. Therefore, it becomes easy, because most likely you get the parts of the illustrate with labeled diagram, the vermis and the cerebellar hemisphere, labeling the lobes, the fissures, and the parts of the vermis, where you need to draw all the parts in chronological order, which is not chronological only in the vermis part, but also in the corresponding cerebellar hemispherical part. So, this is all about the anterior lobe till primary fissure. To recapitulate once again, looking at the diagram, you all know that the vermis starts with lingula, which doesn't have cerebellar hemisphere by its side. It has the superior cerebellar notch. Then we have the central lobule, which has the ala by its side. Then we have the culmen, which has the anterior quadrangular lobule by its side. And then we have the primary fissure. This is all about the anterior lobe. You take 2 minutes time, and then you draw this diagram of the vermis and the corresponding cerebellar hemispheres. If required, color it so that you can remember. We will go to the next slide now. So now we will see posterior to the primary fissure and anterior to the horizontal fissure, what are the parts on the vermis? We see the declive, The decline has the corresponding cerebellar hemisphere as posterior quadrangular lobule. Then we have the folium, which has the superior semilunar lobule or lobular simplex. Therefore, in this posterior lobe, the anterior part, we have the declive and folium, which has the posterior quadrangular lobule and superior semilunar lobule. Then from the horizontal fissure to posterolateral sulcus, as a continuity of the posterior lobe, you have the tuber. Tuber has the inferior semilunar lobule. Then you have the pyramid, which has the biventral lobule. Then you have the evula, which has the tonsil. Therefore, you can see that the entire posterior lobe, which is between the primary fissure and ultimately up to the posterolateral sulcus, has the declive, folium, tuber, pyramid, evula as the parts on the vermis, and the corresponding cerebellar parts are the posterior quadrangular lobule, superior and inferior semilunar lobules, biventral lobule and the tonsil. Again, I would like you to color these corresponding cerebellar hemispherical parts and the parts on the vermis. And the last part, which is again black posteriorly, is the nodule. Now, what is there by the side of the nodule is the flocculus or the flocculonodular lobe. So, horizontal fissure, actually, it's a complete fissure. It divides cerebellum into superior and inferior halves or proximal and distal halves. Now, how will you remember? It's an important question now. How will you remember the parts on the vermis in chronological order? Because if you remember the parts on the vermis easily, then only thing you have to remember are the parts on the corresponding parts on the cerebellar hemisphere. So there is a wonderful mnemonic here. Lal Chand could die for Terilin pants unnecessarily. Let us see what it means. Lal is lingula. Chand is central lobule. Could is culmen. Die is declive. For is folium. Terilin is tuber. Pants is pyramid. Un is evula. Necessarily is nodule. So Lal Chand could die for Terilin pants unnecessarily. And then you have the corresponding hemispherical parts, which is ala, anterior quadrangular lobule, posterior quadrangular lobule, superior inferior semilunar lobule, biventral lobule and tonsil. So if you remember this mnemonic of Lal Chand could die for Terilin pants unnecessarily, you know the parts on the vermis, then it is easy to remember the corresponding parts on the cerebellar hemisphere. Now, as we are almost in the end of this gross anatomical aspect of the fissure, the lobes, the vermis, the superior surface, I will ask you to finish the diagram of the vermis and the corresponding hemispheres. And while you draw the corresponding hemispheres, your corresponding parts on the vermis should have the same color, because then only the examiner will know that your declive is corresponding with the posterior quadrangular lobule or pyramid is corresponding with biventral lobule and more so. So we will take a pause now and you finish your diagram as I take you to the next part of the cerebellum. I'm sure you have got a fairly good understanding about the cerebellum, the hemispheres, the parts of the hemispheres, the fissures, the vermis, the valicula, the inferior aspect, and the nuclei. Only thing is, in the hemispheres, you will be able to see the varmes, you will be able to identify the valacula, you will be able to identify the superior and inferior cerebellar hemispheres, the fissura prima, the horizontal fissure, and the postulateral sulcus. But you will not be able to delineate the parts of the varmes, the parts of the hemispheres, though you will be able to delineate the anterior lobe, the posterior lobe, and the flocculonodular lobe if the flocculus is present. But unfortunately, you will not be able to identify the nuclei of the cerebellum by naked eye. There is a wonderful concept in cerebellum. I would like to draw your attention to the Stone Age individuals, how we became erect. Initially, we used to crawl, then we could sit, then we could stand with support, then we could stand without support, then we could walk, and then we could run. So, it is basically, as you must have read in history, the Old Stone Age, the Middle Stone Age, and the New Stone Age. So, this was the different lithic ages, Paleolithic, Neolithic. So, these are the various stone ages which we have studied in history. If we look at the cerebellum, because cerebellum is a very primitive structure which is present since the Old Stone Age time. So, it is called Archicerebellum. Then we have the Paleocerebellum. And then we have the Neocerebellum. Therefore, there are three, phylogenetically, there are three aspects of cerebellum. Archi means the oldest. Paleo means the intermediate. Neo means the latest, new. The most primitive part of cerebellum is the lingula, the flocculonodular lobe, the fastigial nucleus. Now, these are basically the vestibular nuclei connects to vestibulocerebellar fibers. What does these vestibulocerebellar fibers do? They are mainly meant for the equilibrium or balance. So, it is present in the fishes, amphibians. It is very, very prominently featured there. We too had it since the beginning of the Stone Age. So, Archicerebellar complex is the most primitive one with the lingula and the flocculonodular lobe with the vestigial nucleus through the vestibulocerebellar fibers. This was helping us to maintain equilibrium or balance. Therefore, from crawling to sitting to standing with support and then standing was an evolution of how to maintain balance or equilibrium. This is very important. So, Archicerebellum is the phylogenetically the most primitive cerebellum, which has functional component in maintenance of equilibrium through the vestibulocerebellar fibers, which are present, well present till now in the fishes and amphibians, and it is better, more evolutionary sound because it is contributing in maintaining equilibrium and balance in all individuals. Now, taking you to the next slide is the paleocerebellum. Paleocerebellum is basically is the intermediate one, which has the central lobule, ala, culmen, and anterior quadrangular lobule, pyramid, evula, and if you see in the slide, I have given nucleus interpositors, means emboliform and globose. This is all paleocerebellum. So, what does it do? It is
concerned with the muscle tone and posture. So we could stand erect, we could maintain our posture, we could have the tonicity of the muscles maintained, and these are all possible through the spinocerebellar fibers. Now, my dear students, you may ask me, ma'am, why do we need to see this phylogeny versus functional difference? Why is because still we are maintaining equilibrium and balance, still we are maintaining tonicity of muscle and posture, which are present. Just to draw your attention that it has been through ages, this evolution of cerebellum has occurred through ages, from Archie to Paleo to Neo, and these are very well present in birds and reptiles. And you can therefore you can see that the paleocerebellar component at the central lobule, ala culmen, anterior quadrangular lobule, pyramid, uvula, and nucleus interpositus, meaning the globose and the emboliform nuclei, which are having the spinocerebellar fiber connections, which are contributing in mainly muscle tone and posture. So you now know what is paleocerebellum. The next is the neocerebellum. Neo means new. Therefore, it is the Neolithic age. We call it Neolithic age. If you open up, you will see Neolithic age, and the what has happened in this Neolithic age is the fine movements came into existence. So we were crude in the beginning, then we could run, we could maintain our posture, then we became fine to ignite fire, to do fine skilled work. And if you look at how the evolution is happening in our society, like you all have developed the skills of computer, how fine, well skilled you need to be to operate the keyboard. If you have an Android phone, you know how to have the display on your tablet or on the phone and how to operate. It's all game of fingers. Therefore, we are becoming more and more skilled, and the more we are becoming skilled is actually the cerebellum also contributing to our skilled movements. Therefore, when we are talking of new cerebellum, it is the development or final development of the central nervous system, which we call telencephalization. And in this, the entire posterior lobe except the pyramid and nivula, the dentate nucleus. So the fibers are the corticopontocerebellar path, which is contributing in the coordination of voluntary movements, the smooth and skilled movements. So when the question, this can come as a short note, this can come as, this is a very important concept, this can come as a short note, this can come even as a long question, or this can come as an explain why. This can also come as one of your viva questions, or when you are given a cerebellum. So therefore, you now have the archicerebellum, the paleocerebellum, the neocerebellum, the vestibulocerebellar pathway, the spinocerebellar pathway, and the corticopontocerebellar pathway contributing in the maintenance of equilibrium, maintenance of tonicity and posture, and maintenance of these smooth and skilled movements respectively. The nuclei which are involved are the fastigial nucleus for the archicerebellum, interpositors for the paleocerebellum, and dentate nucleus for the neocerebellum. So are the corresponding parts on the vermis as well as the corresponding parts for the cerebellar hemispheres. Please practice this with a table. Your first table should be archicerebellum, second table should be neocerebellum, paleocerebellum, third table should be neocerebellum. I will show you shortly how this table can be made. Prepare this, illustrate with a flowchart or a labeled table that the parts of how phylogeny differs, or it can be correlated with the functional differences in cerebellum? This question needs to be practiced. Therefore, this has innumerable MCQs. So, you can see neocerebellum is concerned with A, the maintenance of tone, maintenance of posture, maintenance of equilibrium, and maintenance of skilled movement, which you know what is the right answer. Similarly, there are other questions which you can prepare out of this. We will do the clinical anatomy. I will do in my successive slides. The microanatomy will be done by Dr. Suranjali Sharma, who will take you to the different layers of the cerebellum histologically. And more when we see the cerebellum, take it in hand and see. Because in cerebellum, practically nothing is much there when you take it in hand. And in histological part, definitely you have one slide on cerebellum, which you need to see and draw in your copy. So, more I will do in my successive slides. Till then, you practice these diagrams as I come up with the successive slides. So, coming to a quick recapitulation of the phylogeny and the functional difference of paleocerebellum, we have the central lobule, ala, culmen, and anterior quadrangular lobule, pyramid, divula, nucleus, interpositors, which are through the spinocerebellar fibers, maintains the muscle tone and posture, and it is present in the lower vertebrates with limbs, birds, and reptiles. Therefore, you can get questions in the form of the archicerebellum, paleocerebellum, and the neocerebellum. So, correlation between the phylogeny and the functional difference. So, this slide is for the paleocerebellum. Coming to the next slide, a quick recapitulation of the neocerebellum, the phylogeny, where we can see the middle or the posterior lobe except the pyramid and nivula, the dentate nucleus, through the corticopontocerebellar pathway. It is mainly responsible for coordination of voluntary movements, the smooth movements, and the skilled movements. Therefore, neocerebellum, the most important points are neocerebellum, the components of the cerebellum which are included into it, the nucleus which is as the neocerebellum, the fibers or the pathway which controls the neocerebellar functions, and what are the functions? The coordination of the voluntary movements, smooth and skilled. So please, my dear students, practice this, the phylogeny with the functional difference, archicerebellum, paleocerebellum, and neocerebellum. Please write it down before we proceed again. Coming to the next slide, a quick recapitulation of the neocerebellum, the phylogeny, where we can see the middle or the posterior lobe except the pyramid and nivula, the dentate nucleus, through the corticopontocerebellar pathway. It is mainly responsible for coordination of voluntary movements, the smooth movements, and the skilled movements. Therefore, neocerebellum, the most important points are neocerebellum, the components of the cerebellum which are included into it, the nucleus which is as the neocerebellum, the fibers or the pathway which controls the neocerebellar functions. And what are the functions? The coordination of the voluntary movements, smooth and skilled. So, please, my dear students, practice this, the phylogeny with the functional difference, archicerebellum, paleocerebellum, and neocerebellum. Please write it down before we proceed again. In this slide, you can see a flow chart. A flow chart, the first column is the phylogenetic division. What does this division mean? The archi, the paleo, the neocerebellum. Next column is the anatomical component.
So archi cerebellum is the flocculonodular lobe and lingula. Paleocerebellum is the anterior lobe except lingula, pyramid and evula. Neocerebellum is the posterior lobe except pyramid and evula. Now the chief connections are the vestibular apparatus for the archi cerebellum, the spinocerebellar pathway for the paleocerebellum, and we have the corticopontocerebellar pathway that is responsible is the pons for the chief connection. So the functions are, for the archi cerebellum it is the body equilibrium, for paleocerebellum it is the muscle tone and the movements, the crude movements, and for neocerebellum it is the fine scaled smooth movements, the coordination of the body movements. Coming to the last column, that is the functional classification. So it is the vestibulocerebellum for the archi cerebellum, spinocerebellum for the paleocerebellum, and the corticopontocerebellum for the neocerebellum. Therefore, this is very important that you practice this flowchart. Now, students, if you do this flowchart, your phylogeny is done, your pathways is done, your functional components is done, and functional classification is also done. So we go to the next slide, which is the arbor vitae cerebelli. Now this is the arbor vitae cerebelli. Look at the diagram. The diagram posterior to the pons, you can see the cut section of the cerebellum, which looks like the branches of a tree. And this is the reason why it is called arbor vitae. Now this shows arrangement of white matter in the vermis and hemispheres looking like trunk and branches of a tree. And this is known as the arbor vitae cerebelli. I have told it since beginning. Now this particular diagram is for you to practice. So this not only shows the exact location of the cerebellum, this also shows the attachment of the tentorium cerebelli. This also shows the attachment of the relation of the fourth ventricle and the brainstem, particularly pons. And this finally shows the arrangement of the arbor vitae cerebelli. So please practice this diagram. Now see, this slide is the superior cerebellar peduncle. On the right hand side in the diagram, you can identify the superior cerebellar peduncle. Now this is one of the thinnest cerebellar peduncles. Carries afferent or cerebellopetal fibers as the ventral spinocerebellar and tectocerebellar. So spinocerebellar from spinal cord to cerebellum, and efferents are cerebellofugal, that is dentatorubral, that is from the dentate nucleus to red nucleus, dentatothalamic, that's from the dentate nucleus to thalamus. So superior cerebellar peduncle therefore has both afferents and efferent fibers. So you can identify the in the diagram the superior cerebellar peduncle. This slide, this PPT shows the middle cerebellar peduncle. This is a very tricky peduncle because you can see this middle cerebellar peduncle getting attachment with the pons. Therefore, you can get it is one of the thickest with only afferent fibers. Now these afferent fibers are the cerebellopetal fibers, we all know it. So it is pontocerebellar fibers. So pontocerebellar fibers are passing through the middle cerebellar peduncle. Therefore the probable MCQ which can come in relation to this is the fibers which pass through cerebellar peduncles, only afferent variety passes through. So it can be A, superior, B, middle, C, inferior, and D can be something else, say lateral. Now, this is one of the types which can be framed. The other type which can be framed is the fibers which pass through middle cerebellar peduncle are afferent fibers, efferent fibers, both afferent and efferent fibers, and no fiber. So it can be either way. This is quite an important MCQ. Again, practice the diagram for the middle cerebellar peduncle. In this slide, we are discussing the cerebellar peduncles. So there are three cerebellar peduncles, the superior, middle, and inferior cerebellar peduncles. Each connecting the midbrain pons medulla with the cerebellum respectively. Now, then we can see that these fibers which pass through these peduncles are either cerebellopetal fibers or cerebellofugal fibers. So remember the centripetal centrifugal forces. So one petal means coming towards and fugal means leaving. Therefore, we have two sets of fibers, that is either these are the fibers which are afferents or efferents, and they pass through the three peduncles, the superior, middle, and inferior cerebellar peduncles, which connect the midbrain pons and medulla respectively. Now, this is also an important concept because we can get a few MCQs from here. We will see how we can frame it. This PPT shows the inferior cerebellar peduncles. So you can see the inferior cerebellar peduncle, and this inferior cerebellar peduncle contains both afferent and efferent fibers. The afferent or the cerebellopetal fibers are the dorsal spinocerebellar, anterior external arcuate, posterior external arcuate fibers, cuneocerebellar, olivocerebellar, olivocerebellar, vestibulocerebellar, reticulocerebellar fibers. And the efferents, that is cerebellofugal fibers, are cerebellooliveri, cerebellovestibular, and cerebelloreticular tracts. Therefore, you have to practice with the label diagram and you have to remember the afferents and the efferents. Therefore, if we compare all the three peduncles, we find that the superior cerebellar peduncle is the thinnest, which has very few afferent and efferent fibers. Though the middle cerebellar peduncle is the thickest, but it has only the afferent fibers. And the inferior cerebellar peduncles give pathway to multiple afferent and efferent fibers. Now is the time when we quickly look at the blood supply of cerebellum in our next PPT. Before we go to the blood supply, let us quickly look at the white matter of cerebellum, which has only three different types of fibers. The afferent fibers enter through middle and inferior cerebellar peduncles. Efferent fibers leave through superior and inferior cerebellar peduncles, and intrinsic fibers exit within the cerebellum. Therefore, there are three types of fibers in the white matter of the cerebellum. One is intrinsic fibers, which exit within the cerebellum. Afferent fibers enter through middle and inferior cerebellar peduncles, and efferent fibers leave through superior and inferior cerebellar peduncles. This is more of it will never come as a separate question. It will come along with the cerebellar peduncles and white matter of cerebellum. It can also come as the gray matter and the white matter of cerebellum, where in the gray matter you mention the nuclei of cerebellum and in the white matter of cerebellum you classify these three types of fibers, that is afferent, efferent, and intrinsic fibers. And then you write down briefly that intrinsic fibers are within the exit within cerebellum. Efferent fibers leave through superior and inferior peduncles, and afferent fibers enter through middle and inferior peduncles. You may ask me, why not superior? Look, afferent fibers also enter through the superior cerebellar peduncle, but as you know, it's the thinnest and we hardly have a few fibers. Therefore, the major fibers are entering through the middle and inferior. That is why the name of the middle and inferior has been given, but you can also mention the superior cerebellar peduncle. This PPT discusses the blood supply. The blood supply of cerebellum are through three arteries and the corresponding veins. So it is superior cerebellar artery, anterior inferior cerebellar artery, and posterior inferior cerebellar artery. Now we are yet to do the vascular supply of the brain. So for the time being, remember these three vessels. And superior cerebellar artery supplies to mainly to the cerebellar cortex and the nuclei and the superior cerebellar peduncles. Anterior inferior cerebellar artery supplies to anterior portion of the inferior cerebellum and middle cerebellar peduncles and facial and vestibulocochlear nerves. Posterior inferior cerebellar artery supplies to posterior inferior portion of cerebellum, inferior cerebellar peduncle, nucleus ambiguous, vagus, motor nucleus, and spinal trigeminal nucleus, solitary nucleus, and vestibulocochlear nuclei. Therefore, what is most important here is, I would like to draw your attention to two, three concepts here. One is, you need to practice this diagram. We will do the vascular supply of the brain in detail, where we will see the diagram again. Now, number one. Number two is, when we do the superior cerebellar artery, remember it gives vascular supply to the superior cerebellar peduncle, most important. Anterior inferior cerebellar artery gives to the middle cerebellar peduncle and vestibulocochlear nerve. And vestibulocochlear nucleus receives from the posterior inferior cerebellar artery, which also supplies the inferior cerebellar peduncle. These three things you cannot forget in this particular slide, besides the practice of the diagram. So this is very important, because we can have trauma or ischemia of these blood vessels, which can lead to the injury to these arteries, and corresponding peduncles, fibers, nuclei can be damaged. So we will see in the clinical anatomy further. Coming to the functions of cerebellum, this PPT shows that cerebellum, in the first slide only I have said that it has an ipsilateral control of the body. Then, since it is ipsilateral, therefore lesion of one half of cerebellum clinically affect on same half of body, because it is ipsilateral, so it should be same sided. This is one important concept. Now, second is, we all know that it is maintaining equilibrium of body and balance. This was by the archicerebellum. Muscle tone and body posture. This was by the paleocerebellum. And smooth coordination and skilled movements, this was by the neocerebellum. So basically, the functions of cerebellum are the equilibrium and balance, the tonicity and posture, and smooth coordination and skilled movements. So three groups of movements, or three groups of functions, and which is ipsilateral, and therefore lesion of one half of cerebellum clinically affects the same half of the body. So we will see what is the clinical anatomy as we go on in a couple of slides more. In this slide, we can see the cerebellar lesion. Cerebellar lesion can be congenital lesion, that is, there can be either a dysgenesis, that is, it's a malformation, or it's a reduced formation. It can even be absent, where we will not be able to identify because we may not get a viable fetus. Now, next is traumatic. Traumatic, as I have said, there can be a fall, so you can injure the squamous part of the occipital bone, there can be vessels which can be injured, the entire cerebellar hemispheres, the vermes, the valicula, everything can be injured, the peduncles can be injured, the pathway, the nuclei can be injured. Now, the ischemic. Ischemic is quite important because it leads to thrombosis of any cerebellar artery. So, we just now saw there are three sets of cerebellar arteries, that is superior cerebellar artery, anterior and posterior inferior cerebellar arteries. So, thrombosis of any or all or either can lead to ischemic lesions of the cerebellum. Now, degenerative can be due to multiple sclerosis or any autoimmune disorders, and neoplastic can be due to medulloblastoma in children or other expanding tumors. Now, medulloblastoma, as you can make out, it is the cells which can occur, and this is a carcinomatous origin. Therefore, this can give rise to multiple features, not only related to cerebellum, as it encroaches in other organs, in other allied parts of the brain and spinal cord, it can give rise to further lesions. And expanding tumors, you have just now seen that the cerebellum is flanked by the occipital lobe and the pons or part of brainstem. So, a tumor related to brainstem or the occipital lobe can have an indirect compression lesion on the cerebellum. So, therefore, we can see how cerebellum can be affected by the bordering organs or by the ischemia of the vessels or by the degenerative diseases affecting the individuals. The first slide shows the cerebellar syndrome. So, this is involving the lesion of the cerebellum due to any cause. Now, since it is any cause, the first function which will be affected is the motor dysfunction. That's motor paralysis, because this motor dysfunction is because of the cerebellar main function. If you remember, it is ipsilateral and it is motor. Now, coming to the Archi, there can be three types of syndromes. So, Archi cerebellar syndrome, paleocerebellar syndrome and neocerebellar syndrome. So, when we will do these syndromes, we will see the Archi cerebellar syndrome because it is dealing with the most primitive features of the cerebellum. And in the neocerebellar syndrome, we will see the cluster of effects due to the paleocerebellar and neocerebellar involvement. So, neocerebellar syndrome is not exclusively neocerebellar, but includes the paleocerebellar as well as neocerebellar. That is why in the slide, in the PPT, you can see that in the neocerebellar syndrome, it is written that it presents signs due to lesions of both paleocerebellum and neocerebellum. Now, we will see one by one what are the features of the cerebellar syndrome. To start with, we will see the Archi cerebellar syndrome. In this slide, we see the Archi cerebellar syndrome. So, lesion of Archi cerebellum will involve the flocculonodular lobe and lingula. It is also known as the vermis syndrome. The common cause being the medulloblastoma of children. The most important feature will automatically be the disorder in equilibrium, that is maintenance of balance and equilibrium, and motor dysfunctions, unsteadiness in balance. Now, this is also known as positive Romberg sign. We test through it. You ask the individual to stand and stands in anatomical position. Close the eyes. And then after some time, you will see that the individual falls to one side. This is positive Romberg sign. Unsteadiness in gait is another feature. What is the definition of gait? Gait is nothing but the style or pattern of walking. Now, in this archicerebellar syndrome, it is seen that the patient sways or swings from side to side. So this side to side swinging is also known as staggering gait. Coming to the last part is the unsteady trunk of the body. That is, the patient is unable to keep the head erect, moving forwards and backwards. Therefore, there is a movement of the head forwards and backwards, it's not like a pendulum, but a to and fro movement. Therefore, we have seen here very important three features which are related to the maintenance of equilibrium and balance, which is involving the motor functions, which is most commonly found in the medulloblastoma in the children, or it can be in the lesion of any part of archicerebellum. Now, any amount of these signs and symptoms actually depends on the involvement, the depth of involvement, and the number of structures which get involved. So, one of these is, of course, the inability to maintain balance, which we can see by Romberg sign. That is, you can ask your patient to stand erect in anatomical position, close the eyes, and you will see that the patient falls to one of the sides. That is, Romberg sign is positive. Ask the patient to walk. You put a straight line and ask the patient to walk on that line, and you will see that the patient sways or swings from side to side. That is staggering gait. And the third is, you will see that these type of patients have a to and fro movement of the head, that is forward and backward. This is actually the unsteadiness of trunk or the body. Therefore, these are the features of the archicerebellar syndrome. So, my dear students, you just make a column, archicerebellar syndrome, then you quickly write down. It is automatically the disability to maintain equilibrium and the balance. And then in the third point, write down the positive Romberg sign, which is unsteady balance, unsteadiness in the gait, that is the staggering gait, and unsteadiness in the maintaining the trunk of the body, that is the head swings to and fro. This is most commonly found with the medulloblastoma in children. So we will now go to the neocerebellar syndrome in the next slide. Now we are reaching the final part of the cerebellar syndrome, that is the neocerebellar syndrome. Now, as I have already told you, neocerebellar syndrome is basically the paleocerebellar syndrome along with the neocerebellar syndrome. So it is actually the combined effects of lesions due to paleocerebellum and neocerebellum. Therefore, I would like you to concentrate first on the impaired functions of paleocerebellum. Now, let us recapitulate the function of the paleocerebellum was the tonicity of the muscle and posture. Therefore, automatically when there is impaired function of paleocerebellum, there will be hypotonia or loss of resilience of muscle, early fatigue. This condition is known as asthenia. Asthenia is the clinical condition where there is hypotonia, that is loss of resilience of muscle, along with early fatigue. If I have to recapitulate, ask you to recapitulate the stretch reflex, please do it, because you must have seen the knee-jerk reflex in physiology. The knee-jerk reflex, if it is the excessive movements of terminal joints due to loss of influence of cerebellum on stretch reflex. If it happens that the stretch reflex is impaired, then, or it is lost, then there will be series of pendulous flexion and extension movement of the knee jerk when we see it on knee joint. Therefore, I will ask you to first revise the stretch reflex pathway, which you have done in physiology. Then, with your hammer, please practice the normal knee jerk reflex. And then you will understand that when there is a loss of stretch reflex, there is jerky movements, that is pendulous flexion and extension movement of the knee jerk, which is a feature again of the paleocerebellum. Again, there will be postural defect, because I had said that paleocerebellum is concerned with the tonicity of the muscle and the body posture. So in the postural defect, we will see the head is rotated and flexed, and shoulder on a lower level on the affected side. So it is a definite posture for the individual who has impaired function of paleocerebellum. So again, you note down this in your copy, and in the second table is the lesion due to paleocerebellum, where you write actual function, that is tonicity of muscle and body posture. So when it is impaired, there will be hypotonia, early muscle fatigue, which we call asthenia. Then there will be the loss of stretch reflex, which will affect the knee jerk. There will be the flexion, extension, pendulous movement, and the body posture is impaired, and that is the shoulder gets lowered on the affected side with the head rotated and flexed. Therefore, these are the three features which we see in the paleocerebellar impairment, which is a part of the neocerebellar syndrome. Please write it down in a tabular manner. In this PPT, we will see the impaired functions of neocerebellum. Now, since neocerebellum is concerned with the smooth and skilled movements, therefore there will be lot of features when neocerebellum is impaired function, has impaired function, or is damaged, or there can be ischemia, or there can be some congenital anomalies. The first feature which we can see here is the incoordination or asynergy of smooth and precise voluntary movement. Therefore, any smooth and precise voluntary movement cannot be done in a coordinated manner. This is known as cerebellar ataxia. The second feature which it gives is the abnormal repetitive oscillatory movement affecting distal part of limbs. Suppose we ask you to button up your shirt. How do you do it? It's a matter of second. You take the button and insert it within the hole which is on the other side of the shirt. If we ask to pick up a pencil, you just pick it up. But then, when it is a case of neocerebellar syndrome, it is seen that this picking up the pencil or eraser or buttoning up the shirt, the whole movement is split into parts and it is abnormal, and then it can be repetitive also, and then the limbs can be oscillating also. Therefore, this is known as intention tremor. Means when some task is given, the tremor starts happening. That is, the abnormal repetitive oscillatory movement starts happening and the purpose is difficult to achieve. Therefore, two most important features which we can see are: one related to the smooth and skilled movement, the voluntary movement, cerebellar ataxia, and the other is the intention tremor. We will see in the next PPT what are the other features which we can see in neocerebellar syndrome. The next feature which we see in neocerebellar syndrome is dysmetria. What is this dysmetria? Metric means measurement. So if you ask the patient to put the index finger on the tip of the nose, you will see that either it goes above or below or by the sides or cannot achieve the target. So this is done by the finger nose target test, and it is usually past pointing of the finger. The second feature here which we can see is the loss of harmonization of groups of muscles. So as I said earlier, say picking up a pencil, it is split into parts, and that is decomposition of the movements. Now these movements can be oscillatory movements, can be repetitive movements, but all of these are abnormal movements. This diadochokinesia, now this is asked in oral. Remember, asthenia, intention tremor, Romberg sign, dysmetria, this diadochokinesia and two more other features which I will say, these are asked in viva. This diadochokinesia means incoordination between functions of antagonistic muscles. Had I been in a class, in a face-to-face class, I would have asked what the word means. But since you are following it with the PPT, I am not going to ask you. Actually, this is the incoordination between the antagonistic muscles. How do you see this? Ask your patient to clap. How does a clap occur? Two palms facing face to face. One is pronated, the other is supinated. So repeated pronation and supination. How do you do it? First you go slowly, then you start speeding up. You will see that if the lesion is not that prominent, then a slow movement can be achieved. But as you speed up, this is difficult to achieve, this clapping. And this ends up in jerky, incoordinated movement. Therefore, this is known as dysdiadochokinesia. Kinesia is movement, diadocho is the alternate movement, and this is the alternate movement cannot be achieved. Therefore, in this we can see the dysmetria, that is finger pass pointing target test, or this diadochokinesia as the patient to clap, there is incoordination in the movement and the movement is jerky. So again, write down under the neocerebellar syndrome, under the neocerebellar complex, what are the two more features you have added to the syndrome. We will see the last slide in a minute. In the present slide, we have the nuclei of cerebellum. Nuclei are nothing but the compact masses of gray matter in core of white matter. So you can see the nuclei in the diagram as yellow. Then we have two round ones, yellow, and one purple one.
So these are the different nuclei present on each cerebellar hemisphere. So these are four either side of midline. Now when you label the the nuclei, please do it from lateral to medial or medial to lateral in chronological order. So lateral to medial, it is dented. Dented, you are reminded of the dentin or the dentations. Therefore, it is crenated. It's the largest nuclei and it is crenated. Adjacent to it is emboliform, represented as embolus, that is oval in outline. By the side of it, still smaller, is the globose or global, that's round. And towards the center is the fastigial in the white core of the varmis. Therefore, either you start from medial to lateral, where it will be fastigial, globose, emboliform and dentate, or lateral to medial, that is dentate, emboliform, globose or fastigial. Emboliform and globose, these are together known as nucleus interpositors. Now, when you are drawing this diagram, if you label these two as nucleus interpositors, you don't get full marks. Therefore, what you need to do is draw all the four, label all the four in chronological order, and then you can you can club together this and write that globose and emboliform are together known as nucleus interpositors. So, these are the nuclei of the cerebellum, which are nothing but the compact masses of gray matter. Once again, you need to practice this with a labeled diagram. And this is an important question, both as short note, viva, or when you are given the cerebellum, you can be asked. And this can also be attached to some functional cerebellar anatomy, so can be asked as an explain or clinical anatomy question also. Further, in the neocerebellar syndrome, it is seen that the subject has a difficulty in articulation of speech due to incoordination of muscle function of larynx, tongue and lips. Suppose you ask the patient, how does it? This is known as dysarthria. Arthria is the articulation problem. So how does it occur? You ask the patient to, what is your name? The patient says, now suppose the patient says his name is Ravindranath. So he will now say Ravindranath. So this is, there is a gap, there is a lack of articulation, there is a difficulty in incoordination of muscles. And further, I can give you an example. Suppose you ask, what did I teach? The patient will say, cerebellum. So, this is a slurring speech. So, this is occurring with dysarthria. There is lack of articulation, and as a result, this has given rise to a slurring phenomena. So this speech is known as slurring speech. And in the last feature is nystagmus, that is doll's eye movement of the eyeball. What happens? Doll's eye movement. If you look at the old vinyl dolls which could blink, there was the movement of the pupil used to oscillate. So this is due to the incoordination between the movement of the extraocular muscles. There is rhythmic oscillation of the eyeball while trying to fix the gaze for long. So this horizontal side-to-side movement gives a jerky movement of the eyeball when the gaze is returned back. So how do you do it? You take a pin in front of the eyeball or something very fine, and then you take it away. As you again bring it closer,
there will be the jerky movement of the gaze of the individual. This is known as the doll's eye movement or nystagmus. It starts oscillating. The eyeball starts oscillating. Therefore, if I have to conclude now about the neocerebellar syndrome, the array of features, we saw the asynergy, we saw the intention tremor, we saw the dysmetria, we saw the dysdiadochokinesia, dysarthria leading to slurred speech, and nystagmus. Out of all this, you have to remember what is dysdiadochokinesia, what is dysarthria, what is nystagmus, what is Romberg sign, because all these, your staggering gait, so all these will be asked maybe in a whole syndrome pattern. It can come as a theory question, or your examiner can ask you, can ask you to show, can ask you to describe, or even your examiner can give you an example and then you may have to role play it out. Therefore, this is very important that all the features of the neocerebellar syndrome is remembered and learnt by heart. So now, my dear students, your last exercise is to put these two last features, the slurring speech and the nystagmus, in the column under the neocerebellum. Therefore, you have got the features of the archicerebellum, you have got the features of the neocerebellum, under which you have two tables, one for the paleocerebellum, the other for the neocerebellum. I shall quickly conclude with you the entire cerebellum in a very brief manner in the next PPT. I thought I'll not make a PPT, rather I will do the cerebellum. This is the last summarization of the entire cerebellum. So cerebellum, remember that it controls ipsilateral control of the body, located in the posterior cranial fossa. It is under the occipital lobe, posterior to the brainstem, that is dorsal surface of pons and medulla, separated by fourth ventricle, related to the tentorium cerebelli. It has two halves and a elevated portion superiorly, which is known as vermis, and it has two notches, the superior cerebellar and the posterior cerebellar notch. Now it has three fissures, that is the primary fissure, the horizontal fissure, and the posterolateral sulcus. And it has three lobes, that's the anterior lobe, the posterior or middle lobe, and the flocculonodular lobe. Now, coming to the underneath, the inferior aspect, the vermis is the elevated part, and the narrow groove on the inferior aspect is known as valacula. If we see the parts of the vermis from anterior to posterior, it is Lal Chand could die for pterylene pants unnecessarily. That is lingula central lobule culmen decliphyolium tuber pyramid evula nodule. Corresponding cerebellar hemispheres are ala anterior quadrangular lobule, posterior quadrangular lobule, superior inferior semilunar lobule, biventral lobule, tonsil, and the flocculus. Now, after this, we have the nuclei of the cerebellum, which are nothing but compact masses of gray matter within the core of white matter, which are four. From lateral to medial are the dented, emboliform, globose, and fastigial, out of which globose and emboliform forms the nucleus interpositus. The largest is the dented nucleus. The cerebellum has a phylogenetic evolution, that is archicerebellum, which is lingula, flocculonodular lobe, and fastigial nucleus, has the vestibular cerebellar fibers concerned with the maintenance of equilibrium or balance. The paleocerebellum with the central lobule, ala culmen, anterior quadrangular lobule, pyramid, divula, nucleus, interpositors has the spinocerebellar fibers and therefore maintains muscle tone and posture. The neocerebellar complex comprises of the middle or posterior lobe except pyramid and nivula. Dentate nucleus has the corticopontocerebellar pathway concerned with the voluntary movements, the smooth movements and the skilled movements. The cerebellum on a cut section looks like the tree with plenty of white matter, and this is known as the arbor vitae cerebelli. The cerebellum has three peduncles, the superior, middle and inferior cerebellar peduncles. The superior cerebellar peduncle, being the thinnest, has afferent and efferent fibers, and the most important being the spinocerebellar afferent fibers and dentatothalamic, dentatorubral, the efferent fibers. This is thinnest. The middle cerebellar peduncle is the most important one, which is thickest, but unfortunately it doesn't have any efferent fiber. It has only afferent fibers. This has the pontocerebellar fibers. The inferior cerebellar peduncle has plenty of afferent and efferent fibers, out of which a few fibers are very important. That is the spinocerebellar, the external arcuate, posterior external arcuate, the olivocerebellar, vestibular cerebellar fibers. And the efferents are the cerebello-olivary, cerebello-vestibular and cerebello-reticular fibers. The white matter of cerebellum comprises of three types of fibers, the afferent, efferent and intrinsic. Afferent and efferent, all of you know. Intrinsic is the exit within the cerebellum. The blood supply of cerebellum comprises of superior cerebellar, anterior and posterior inferior cerebellar arteries. Now, superior cerebellar supplies the superior cerebellar peduncle, anterior inferior cerebellar supplies the middle cerebellar peduncle, and posterior inferior cerebellar supplies the inferior cerebellar peduncle. The cerebellum basically has the ipsilateral control. It's the motor control, and it maintains equilibrium, balance, tonicity of muscle, posture, and smooth and skilled movements. The cerebellar lesion can be due to congenital, traumatic, ischemic, degenerative, neoplastic. When we talk about the cerebellar syndrome, it has to be either archicerebellar, paleocerebellar or neocerebellar. Now the paleo and neo comes under the one cluster of neocerebellar syndrome. The archicerebellar syndrome, one thing which you must remember is the disorder in equilibrium, the unsteady gait. Now, this unsteady gait is known as staggering gait. You put a straight line, ask the patient to stand or to walk across the straight line, this patient will not be able to walk. The patient sways from side to side, and the patient, if you ask to stand with closed eyes, the patient will fall to one side. This is positive Romberg sign. Coming to the neocerebellar syndrome with the paleocerebellar involvement, there will be hypotonia or asthenia, that is early fatigue and loss of resilience of muscle, the postural defect and the pendulous knee jerk. Here, my dear students, I have asked you to revise the stretch reflex as done in the physiology and the knee jerk reflex has to be practiced. Now, the neocerebellar syndrome has the asynergy of smooth and precise voluntary movement, which we call cerebellar ataxia, and intention tremor. That is, if you give a task, it starts oscillatory, abnormal, repetitive movements, say buttoning of the shirt or picking up a pencil. Dysmetria is the finger-nose pass-pointing test. Loss of harmonization of groups of muscles. Dysdiarrhocochinesia, ask the patient to clap, or alternate movements, it is impossible for them to do. Dysarthria, ask name, it will be broken into pieces. So we call it slurring of speech. Nystagmus, ask
to gaze at some particular object and then you try to bring that back, the gaze back. There will be doll's eye movement or oscillatory movement of the eyeball or horizontal side to side movement. So these are principally the features of the cerebellar involvement. Now, I would like you to practice these diagrams which I have said, the diagram of Vermes, the diagram of cerebellum, the diagram of the nuclei, the flow chart, and make one question on the neocerebellar syndrome and the signs and symptoms, and the archicerebellar syndrome with the signs and symptoms. Then, as I always say, frame your own MCQs, because your learning, your framing is the best framing possible. And finally, the microanatomy of the cerebellum will be done by Dr. Suranjali Sharma, who will post you the slides, and you will do the microanatomy more. When we meet, we will do the cerebellum, you will hold the cerebellum, see it, and you will see the slides of cerebellum. Is that okay? So I close now, and in 2 days' time I will do the fourth ventricle with you. Thank you so much.